Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the most merciful. To all of our viewers out there, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And we're very glad that you are joining us one more time as we're having this beautiful discussion with a renowned, prominent scholar of Islam, Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris, as we are talking about the intersection of faith and reason. And yesterday, Sheikh, you mentioned an extremely important point, and that is, as a religious person, or all revealed religion, rationality is innate in them. And that includes Islam and all previously revealed religion as well.
And we give reasons for why is this so.
Yeah. Yes. And as a religious person, you are expected, as somebody who is not jeopardizing or compromising their intellect in the beliefs that you are believing at this point.
No.
I am reminded of a story. It said that a philosopher sat with a group of farmers, and he wanted to provoke them. And he said to one of them, a very simple man, and he said, how do you know if somebody asks you, does God exist? What would you tell them? And the farmer said, I would invite them to my garden. And I would say, come and find him there. The philosopher was very offended by this answer. And he said, what if they come to your farm or to your garden and they tell you that they did not find him? What would you say? And the farmer said, well, I would tell them to look closer. I'm not sure if that was a good answer. It was definitely a simplistic one. But it seems that believers at this point are at the defensive, where they would actually have to give a proof that God does exist. Is this something that Islam or previous revealed religions have addressed?
Yes, of course. And inshallah, this will be our discussion, I hope, tonight. What is the evidence for the existence of the Creator? And by the way, if the farmer was intellectual, to some extent, he would have said what a thinker said, that he said it in Arabic, that if you do not know how to express yourself, that doesn't mean that you don't think. Because these are two different things. Because the farmer could have an argument, but it is not the kind of argument that he expresses in a way that convinces the philosopher.
Well, does that mean that the argument or the issue here is that people of faith are not able to eloquently state their beliefs?
I can't say of faith, because this includes some Muslim philosophers, and I hope I'm one of them.
So, you indeed are.
So we argue, of course, we argue. For example, now, because I studied Western philosophy, I can argue with Western people, because I can use their terminology and so on. It is a matter of language. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of language only. Mm-hmm.
But isn't the question itself ironic that we would actually have to prove that God exists and not them having to disprove that?
Yes, inshallah. We'll show that this should not be the case. And when we come to the Quranic argument, inshallah, when we come to that, we'll show that this should not be the case.
That
we should not fall into this trap.
That we have to prove that God exists.
Yes, because the natural thing is that there is a creator. The onus is on the on the person who denies the existence of the creator.
The burden of proof is on them, not on us believers. No. Well, ladies and gentlemen out there, you are in for a treat, and you are invited to be part of this. Well, in that case, I guess we would have to ask, what are the fundamentals then upon which such a belief is based?
Yes, but I think that we said yesterday that there must be a rational argument supporting the fundamentals of the religion. In fact, you can broaden this and say that anyone who invites us to believe in an ideology, whether it is Marxism or democracy or dictatorship or whatever.
Usually we're not invited to dictatorship. It's just imposed on us.
Okay. No, some people defend dictatorship. No. So he must give us reasons for the fundamentals of his ideology. For example, democracy is the ruler of the people. Why should the people rule? A person can ask. And democratic theoreticians of democracy try to answer this question. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't give me good reasons why democracy is better than dictatorship, then why do you expect me to agree with you? So we're saying that the fundamentals of the religion must be rationally supported. There must be evidence for the truth of the fundamentals of the religion. And we said yesterday, I think, that, not yesterday.
Last episode.
That's episode. That secondary matters that are based on this
need not have
any direct proof for them. But I forgot to mention that, in fact, sometimes you can have direct proof even for some of the secondary things. Mm-hmm. For some of them. This is, now, of course, you know that there is a new kind of science called miracles, the scientific miracles of the Quran. Mm-hmm. These miracles depend on some of what I called secondary issues, like the development of the embryo. Mm-hmm. Most Muslims believed in this because they believed in the Quran, and this is what God said.
I see.
Now we are having evidence that this development of the embryo that is described in the Quran could not have been known at that time by any human means, because the means by which this was discovered and new. Mm-hmm. And it is because of this that some people, in fact, accepted Islam. I know one of them accepted Islam because of this. So even some of the secondary things, this is not necessary, but even some of the secondary things can be, there can be direct evidence for their truth.
And I think what I'm understanding is that the original claim itself needs not to be of a miraculous nature that you have, but it must have some sort of a rational reasoning behind it.
Yes. Now, before we come to the fundamentals, of course, the fundamentals, you know, mm-hmm. include the existence of God, why God should be worshipped, the truth, the authenticity of the Prophet, mm-hmm. The fact that the Quran is the word of God, mm-hmm. The fact that there is life after death, and so on. Mm-hmm. These are the fundamentals. For all these fundamentals, the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ give us evidence. Mm-hmm. They give us evidence for all of these fundamentals. So when a prophet comes, he doesn't start with proving the existence of God, because most people, even until today, the overwhelming majority of human beings believe in the existence of the Creator. So when a prophet comes, he invites people to worship that Creator, whose existence
they believe.
Yes, they might not have, they might attribute some things to the Creator. I mean, their knowledge of the Creator might not be perfect, mm-hmm. but and all people all over the world believe in the core of this, that there is a Creator. Even when they worship some idols or so, they know the difference between the idols that they worship and the God that is in heaven. Mm-hmm. And all people, the Arabs were like this. I know some people in Africa who are like this. So this, the fact that there is a Creator is something that
is a given.
Yes.
To Muslim.
So a prophet comes to invite people to worship that Creator. But someone might say, I am one of that minority. I don't believe in the existence of the Creator. What would the religion say? The religion would not say, no, we are not dealing with people like you.
Because the prophets, when they come, the assumption is that the people do already believe in God.
But there is a minority of people
who
say, no, we don't believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
So the Quran gives them evidence for the existence of the Creator.
Okay.
What is the evidence? I am relying in answering some of these questions on Ibn Taymiyyah's thought. I happened to write a book about what I called philosophical theology, Islamic philosophical theology, according to Ibn Taymiyyah.
Mm-hmm.
So inshallah we'll rely heavily on what he says, because he was very much concerned with this, with this problem, because he had to argue with the philosophers, with
of his time.
He had very interesting things to say about this.
Sheikh, just in case to accommodate our viewers who may not be familiar with some of the names that we mentioned, just briefly, Ibn Taymiyyah, whom that would be?
I think it is enough to say to, yeah, and to the non-Muslims that he was one of the one of the, our greatest thinkers. He combined good knowledge of the religion, I mean the Quran, the sayings of the Prophet, and so on, with knowledge of almost every branch of knowledge that was available at his time. And he said something, had it not been for the fact that he was a truthful person, I wouldn't have wouldn't have believed him.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he argued with the philosophers when he was 14 years old.
At 14, Ibn Taymiyyah was arguing with the philosophers.
Yeah.
With this, we will take a short break and we will come back to the issue of the proof for the existence of God. So please stay tuned.
أستغفر الله العظيم الذي لا إله إلا هو الحي القيوم وأتوب إليه. أستغفر الله العظيم الذي لا إله إلا هو الحي القيوم وأتوب إليه.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome back to the intersection of faith and reason with our guest here, dear Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris. Sheikh, you were talking earlier about the rational proof for the existence of God.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes. Ibn Taymiyyah says that in fact the real evidence for the existence of the Creator is human nature. Yeah, but this raises many questions.
What does he mean by that when he said
that
human?
This is something, and he likens it to, there are many things which you know by nature. For example, the fundamentals of the principles of logic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, no one needs to teach you that a contradictory statement is a false statement.
Sure.
You know this.
Sure.
That when you believe in what you see. So suppose now I am seeing you, and I say, if someone says, how do you know that Yasser exists? I say, I have seen him. See, well, that is not a proof. Give me a proof. No. That is a proof.
Is he almost assuming that, not assuming, but is he saying that this is innate?
Yes.
In the human nature to believe in God.
In God, no. And it is just like these self-evident truths that half is less than a whole. And so on. Now, but this raises many questions. He himself tries to answer some of the questions. The first question is, what kind of knowledge is this? We know that the child doesn't have this knowledge of the Creator. How do we know that he doesn't even speak? And there's a verse in the Quran which makes it clear that when you come out of the womb of your mother, you come out knowing nothing.
لا تعلمون شيئا.
نعم. والله that God, when God brought you out of the wombs of your mothers, you came out knowing nothing. And then he endowed you with sight, with hearing, with mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the Quran itself, we have another verse which says that this religion is a religion of human nature.
Mm.
And there is a hadith of the Prophet, a very famous hadith, that every newborn child is born according to the fitra. Fitra means original good human nature.
Mm-hmm.
The nature which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, God put in the heart of every human being at the
their
hour
time
of birth.
Creation. Or
every bad thing is a deviation from this
human nature.
Human, this fitra.
Hmm.
Let us use this Arabic word.
Fitra.
And remember, I want the listeners to remember that there is no equivalent to this word in English.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Arabic, sometimes people misuse it. But in the Quranic terminology, it means good, original human nature. So it says that this deen is the deen of that nature. So this means that the whole religion has its roots in human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And the Prophet says, every newborn child is born according to that
nature.
Fitra. Then it is his parents that make him deviate, and it is the devils also that make him deviate from. So how do you reconcile these two?
Mm.
He says that this knowledge develops with the development of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You are born knowing nothing, but then as your mind develops, you don't need to be taught this, even if no one speaks to you about God or anything. Then as your mind develops, you come to be aware of the fact that you have a creator.
And that creator,
and that you must worship worship him. Now, I in the book that I wrote about Ibn Taymiyyah, it has not been published yet. I said this is like saying that there is a seed of knowledge, not knowledge, but a seed of knowledge that germinates into a full-fledged tree with the development of the mind. So this was his first question. The second question, suppose that someone said, I don't feel this.
You're talking about what might be problematic with saying that it is in the nature of humans.
Yes.
So that was the first objection.
Yes.
And secondly, a person is saying that, I don't feel it.
I don't feel it.
Sure.
He tells him, you must be mistaken, because the overwhelming majority of human beings, there's a consensus on this.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot be right and all these people be wrong. And he mentions here something interesting. He says, when people agree, there is a consensus on something positive, they say, we know this is accepted.
Mm.
But sometimes there might be a consensus on something negative.
Sure.
They say, this is not true,
sure.
We don't know this. Because he said that this might be because of lack of knowledge. But as far as affirming something, the consensus is...
Of the people is to be accepted.
Is to be accepted.
Hmm.
Now, again he says, but why do people then deny the existence of the Creator? No. He said, these people are three kinds.
Hmm.
The first are just liars.
And he's very blunt about it.
Yeah, he says they are liars. They know in their heart of hearts that there is a creator. But they don't want to acknowledge this because, yeah, I mean, mistakenly, they think that this might not be in their interest for some worldly gains or some. So they deny it. And he gives the example of Pharaoh. Because the Quran says, and they denied it while
deep in their hearts
they
knew it.
They knew it. Mm-hmm. The second group is interesting. He said that these people are suffering from a kind of sophistry. And he said this can be a real disease. They are not pretending. He says when a person suffers from this kind of mental disease, he can deny self-evident truths. And by the way, the first book that I read, the first philosophy book that I read was Bertrand Russell on the problems of philosophy. And he was explaining the position of the empiricists. Some people who said, how do we know that there is an external world? How do we know? Now I see you. I say, Yasser exists because I can see him. But what if I close my eyes? I don't see you.
Does he still exist?
Does he still exist? What if I turn away? Does he still exist? And I remember very well when I was reading this, I began
to feel things around you.
Around me, to see whether the table exists or not. And they can deny, as I said, even logical principles, mathematical principles. And I would add, this is not what Ibn Taymiyyah said. Some people think that when they do this, they are being rational. In fact, they are not. Because when you say, why is this so? You are asking for an explanation. And usually when you ask, this means that you think that what the person is saying contradicts a truth that you know. But if there is no truth at all, then the question doesn't arise. And a person who doubts everything cannot ask any question. So this is my contribution to what you said. The third is also very interesting. He says that there is a difference between having something in your mind and being aware of it. Perhaps this will remind you of some psychoanalysis. He said these are two different things. And he likens the mind to the body. He said that there might be something, for example, in your back or so. You don't know it. It is in your body, but you are not aware of it.
And the fact that you're not aware of it
doesn't mean that it is not.
It does not exist.
And he said the same applies to the mind. And he gives examples of things that with which you are familiar. Sometimes you pass through an experience, and you discover something bad about yourself. You say to yourself, I didn't think that
I'm capable of this.
I didn't think that I have this kind of envy. So he says that there is a difference between the two, and he says that the importance of evidence for people like these is to make them have this link between the two.
Bring that awareness out.
Bring that awareness out. The third question is.
But before we go on, with these three kind of people, I am very sure that Ibn Taymiyyah did not intend to insult the intelligence of these people. Because in the category here.
Except the first one.
When he was very blunt about it.
No.
I think your addition alluded to it, that some people do really think that they're being very rational in the process.
Yeah.
So their denial is not necessarily for because they're lying or worldly gain or anything like that. These are people who have actually lived for this, wrote and read about it, as you're probably very aware of this. We will come back to these people.
Yes, but remember, he said he accused only the first people, but he was a kind of sympathetic with
them. The second people, I felt that.
Because he said this is a kind of disease that can be cured, this sophistry. And being unaware also is something that can be, you pass through an experience. And I know one of my relatives, he was a communist. And he went and studied geology in Russia and came back a good Muslim from the Soviet Union at that time. And he said that he passed through an experience. They went down a mine. I don't know, it must be some kilos down. And then a rock fell and closed the path out.
To go up.
Okay. Yeah. He said at that time, he believed in God. So a person can pass through an experience which reveals to him the truth that is already in his
innate in him. Sheikh, that's a point that we would come to continue in the next episode. But with this, we thank you again for being with us in the intersection of faith and reason with Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris, hoping that you would join us the next time as well. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.